friends, welcome to Cashing In on Content Marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal. And every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about the ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring how cognitive biases can impact the way you communicate. And I am so excited to be joined by Ginny Dietrich, the founder of SpinSucks. She's a PR master, and I am so excited to hear her insights. Welcome to the show, Ginny.
You're so funny. Well, it's my pleasure. I'm very, very happy to be here. We've had this on the calendar for a really long time.
I know. I tend to book just like far out because I book far out in advance because every week I do a little bit for the podcast, like for each episode,
sure.
You know, and it
makes sense. Yeah.
It gets out of control sometimes if I book them all at once. So let's start from the very beginning. What is a cognitive bias? Like, what are we talking about here today?
You're so funny. I thought we were going to go like history.
Where were you born?
Right. Well, I don't think you can get away with this anymore, but at the beginning of The Jerk, if you've ever seen that with Steve Martin, he's like, I was born a poor black child. I don't think we can get away with that anymore, but it's pretty funny. So a cognitive bias is actually the way that we process, as human beings, the way that we process information and make decisions. And so in communications, when we think about that, it often represents the obstacles and the opportunities that we have to make with our customers or our prospects' own psychological tendencies. So our cognitive biases help us address four problems: too much information, which we all deal with every day, not enough meaning, needing to act fast, or what we should remember and discard. And I think that when we think about our cognitive biases, especially from a content and communications perspective, we have to think about what is our perspective and is it affecting the way that we're communicating or messaging? You know, as we think about things like, I'm really careful about the way that I talk about things like, I prefer to say that George Floyd was murdered, but not everybody thinks that way. Or I also believe that there was a coup on the Capitol. Not everybody believes that way. And so you have to think about how the kinds of things that you perceive or that your own innate biases affect the way that you're communicating, the way that you're creating content, and how that might affect your customers.
So what drew you to this concept? Like, when did this become of interest to you? Did you hear about one and you're like, okay, I have to really dive in to see how this is affecting my own communication? And then you decided to share that. Like, where did this interest come from?
It really started, I want to say, gosh, it's probably been 6 or 7 years now. But I remember Lindsay Bell was our content director at the time. And she said to me, you have the curse of knowledge. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she said, you assume that everybody has the same level of knowledge that you do, especially when they work for you. You assume that everybody has the same level of knowledge and they don't. She's like, Ginny, you have this level of knowledge that most people don't have. And part of it's because of your expertise and your experience, but also part of it's because of your passion and the way that you pursue your career. And that has always stuck with me because I even think about it from the perspective of I'm a cyclist and I didn't get to race last year, but hopefully I get to race this year. Because of the pandemic, everybody bought a Peloton, right? The whole world's got a Peloton now. And so I've had many friends come to me and say, I'm doing these rides, but I don't really understand what they're talking about. I understand what this training is. Can you explain it to me? And when you think about it from that perspective, like at one time I was also a beginner and I had the same questions, but because I was an adult when I started racing, it was 7 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. I can remember having those conversations and having those same questions. And my coach was like, he had the curse of knowledge, my coach at the time. And he wouldn't explain it to me. He's like, well, it's just ride in your power zone 5. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And so it's been interesting to think about it just from that perspective of watching all of these people start to ride the Peloton and trying to understand the cycling terminology where, you know, if you're a coach, you understand it and you have the curse of knowledge. Same thing in our jobs. Like, you're really involved in your business, but not everybody will understand your terminology. I remember working with GE and they actually have a dictionary of the words and the acronyms that they use because they have such a strange vocabulary that isn't known to the rest of the world, that they give a dictionary to new people and to their agencies, curse of knowledge. So when you think about it from that perspective and you start to go, okay, how is what I know affecting that? And how is the way that the things that I believe affecting my communications? It starts to all come together.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Curse of knowledge, I think, is so common in marketing. I mean, somebody joined the team, my colleague Shantae, a couple months ago, and I'm saying all this jargon that we use internally and like all these things. She's like, what is this?
What
acronym?
Are you talking about?
You're totally right. Like, of course, people wouldn't know what this is because we, you know, yeah.
Right. It's like, yes.
It can get out of control in marketing. So I know there's so many of these that we can touch on, and I want to kind of take the lens of getting buy-in internally, because that's one of the goals of the show is to help people communicate their case for, you know, a content or PR or SEO initiative at their company. Uh-huh. And there's two sides of this, right? There's the way that you're talking to your manager or leadership, but then also the preconceived notions that they have when they
come to
meetings, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess let's start with like when you're communicating, to make sure that you're communicating in a way that's, you know, like accurate, in a way that's gonna, maybe a way you can use to your advantage. Like, I know, I think I'm gonna link to another episode. I mentioned this before, that there's a similar episode about psychological triggers. I think it was our second episode of the show, and I'm gonna link to it in the show notes. And I think that he may have touched on the bandwagon effect or something similar, because yep. I feel like this is a tactic you can use, right? Like, if you get other people involved, does it build your case?
Yep. Okay, so I'm going to come back to that in a second, because I think, especially when you're communicating with leadership, I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud, but I'm going to.
Can't wait to hear what this is.
You sort of have to make them think it was their own idea.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when we, and certainly it depends on who it is that you're talking with or trying to get buy-in from. Some people are very open and some people are not. But I'll give you a really good example. I have a client who refuses to do video. He just refuses. He's like, nobody watches video. It's video stupid. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. No, video is not stupid. Almost everybody watches video. Like, you know, but I can't say that to him and I can't present him with statistics and facts because he won't do it. So we have started to do, I've had other team members, which comes into the bandwagon effect. I've had other team members start to do video. And in the last probably 2 weeks, and this has been a year and a half, by the way, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, he's been like, so do you think I should do some video? And I'm like, oh my gosh. Yes. But because he thinks it's his idea now, and because I use the bandwagon effect to get, you know, to sort of show him without putting it in his face, how his employees are using it. He has started to come around and now he thinks it's his idea and he wants to do it. And of course, you know, a year and a half ago, I could have had him doing this, but he wasn't ready. So now he thinks it's his idea and he's going to do video.
So you use this kind of tactic to communicate. Which other ones do you think, play a role in maybe being more persuasive?
You know, I do agree with the bandwagon effect, because we have had several instances when working with clients where you've had to get, and especially in internal communications, where you've had to engage employees in certain things. And, you know, people don't like change. I mean, we just innately don't like change.
Yeah.
And so to get them engaged, we will recruit, you know, sort of the, what I would call the A+ players who always are like, yeah, let's try that. Or, you know, they don't mind taking risk. So we'll recruit those people as a team and we'll incentivize them to participate and discuss. And, you know, sometimes they're called internal ambassadors or, you know, whatever it happens to be, we recruit them as a team. And then it starts to bring that along so that then the rest of the office goes, oh, well, that's interesting. Okay. I can see how they're using it. I'd like to do the same. So, I mean, it works.
Does that tie in with authority bias, which is one of the other ones that we're on? So I'm also going to link to, Jenny has like a really great blog post on SpinSex, or an article on SpinSex about this, and I'm going to link to for anybody who's listening to this because she outlines all of them. Does the authority bias come into play with this too?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they all sort of come in together because it really is the foundation is our own perspectives and our own lenses, right? And so to get buy-in from an executive or to get buy-in from your team or to get buy-in from the sales department or whatever it happens to be, you have to be able to figure out how you're going to work with them and get them to come along. So in some cases it is authority. In some cases it's confirmation. In some cases it's not wanting to be left behind. It's, you know, we've had lots and lots and lots of instances where we've used subject matter experts, and you can get your SMEs, you can't get all of them, right? So maybe you use one or two, and then everybody else sees the success of those two SMEs and they're like, oh, well, I want to be in Forbes, or I want a blog post, or I want to host that podcast, or, you know, whatever happens to be. And then they start coming to you to ask. So I think you probably bring in a lot of these things. You bring in your confirmation, you bring in your authority, you bring in the bandwagon. It starts to bring it all together.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on, because I want to kind of take the lens of what you might be up against with, and you already alluded to this with your story about one of your clients. Is there anything else, any other tips you have for people who are trying, like when they're just thinking about how they're going to communicate? Any other advice you would give to somebody who's going into that sort of even if it's not like an official pitch meeting, just like broaching the subject for the first time?
Yeah, I think quite honestly, a lot of it's just being really self-aware and having confidence. One of the things, you know, because my background is in communications, I do a lot of speaking to students, and the majority of PR students are women. And one of the things I talk about with students is I say, you know, the world has changed, but we're certainly not where we need to be yet. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the business world expects that men will negotiate and ask for what they want. And when women do that, we're seen as aggressive or assertive or, you know, whatever happens to be. It's okay for men to do that, but it's not okay for women to do that. So one of the things I talk about is really building your confidence around that, and not saying I deserve this raise or I deserve this salary because my male counterparts has it, which you do, but unfortunately that argument doesn't work, but doing it in a way of saying, I deserve this salary, and here are all the things to back that up. And a really good example of that is I had a young woman many, many years ago come to me and say, I deserve a raise. And I was like, okay, why? And she goes, because my credit card, I can't pay off my credit cards, and I have all this student debt, and my rent's gone up. And I was like, yeah, that's not why you get a raise. Right. So I think you have to be really self-aware and have the confidence to be able to say, I deserve a raise, or I deserve this bump in salary, or negotiating a new job, or whatever it happens to be. Understand who your audience is, and your personal reasons are not reasons in the business world. So build your business case, understand who the end audience is, and then go for it from that perspective.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting to see kind of like the more personal aspect of that too. Like you said, asking for a raise, or that this can apply to so many different types of internal communication.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's really interesting too, to think about, you know, and it certainly depends on who the person is, like I said earlier, but, you know, use case studies. Or one of the things we always ask new clients is, what are some companies that you admire? And then we can use that information when we're fighting against something or they don't want to do something, we can say, well, let me show you how Apple has done it because Apple is on their list of companies that they admire. Or let me show you how Fractal does it because Fractal is on, a, you know, whatever it happens to be, we can showcase some case studies from the companies that they admire to help us get where we need to be.
So that's interesting. Do you ask that kind of upfront? What companies? Yep. That's a great, just
it's
like
one of our, yeah, it's one yeah. of our first questions. Yeah.
That's a great thing that anybody who's listening can just start doing immediately.
Yeah. Like yeah. I think it's on our input form. Like that's one of the things you have to fill out.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I think we do a similar thing, not quite that, where we ask like what their dream publications are. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We ask that too, because then you kind of know, is this ego driven or is it, do they want the New York Times?
Everybody wants the New York Times.
And I'm always like, why? And usually it's because they golf with somebody who was in the New York Times and the guy is out there on the golf course bragging about it. And so the CEO is like, well, I want to be in the New York Times. And I'm like, okay, great. But what does it do for business? It lets you brag on the golf course, but does it help business wise? And then they go, oh, well, I don't know. So then they go back to the golf course and they're like, so how much money did you make from that New York Times article? I love that one.
That's amazing. Following up with that question. Right. So let's pivot to when you encounter these types of biases, which can get very frustrating when you're trying to build a case and you kind of know that the person who's rejecting it has some sort of like false preconceived notion or at least a biased one.
Yep.
And I imagine some of these might be, you know, you talked already about kind of like using the bandwagon effect and if they see other people doing, which could go in the opposite direction, right? Like they could see other people doing the same thing and it's not a good fit for what you're trying to do as a company, even though everyone else is doing it.
Right.
So I guess just in a general sense, like what advice do you give to somebody who's kind of running up against that? It seemed like in the example you gave, it was to use these other strategies to, you know, break through those barriers. But yeah, what tips do you have for people who are like, I don't know how to get through to this person because they are dealing with like confirmation bias or something where they're seeing, you know, and you can talk about confirmation bias as an example, but I know it's a big question, but I can imagine a lot of people are running into this.
Yeah, I would imagine too. And I think it has, I think it depends, which is a crappy answer, but it depends on the person, right? Like with many of our clients, we can see, okay, we're going to run up against a wall with this. And I mean, like the client I mentioned earlier, is it incredibly important that we use video a year and a half ago? Probably not. I mean, would it be nice? Yeah. And it certainly would be more engaging and we'd be a little bit further ahead, but it's not critical. So in that, from that perspective, we just kept pounding away at it, you know, until, you know, 3 weeks ago, he's like, do you think I should do video? I literally was on the phone and I was talking to him. He's like, do you think we should do video? And I dropped my phone. I was like, I don't know what to say. Yes, I think we should do video. But if it's, and another example of that is we have many clients or prospects who will say, well, how do you measure results? Because we really want to know about media impressions and advertising influences. And we don't know. We do not measure that way. I will not measure that way. Absolutely, positively will not know. So in those instances, I will say, well, we tend to measure things that actually result in revenue for your business. But if you'd like us to show media impressions and advertising equivalencies and Twitter followers and fans and blah, 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 then we'll do that. So we do that and we present that, which I hate, but we do it and we also bring in the other stuff. And eventually what happens is they'll say, yeah, I don't need to know about my Twitter fans and followers anymore. And you're like, yes. But you kind of, there are instances where you'll have to do what their preconceived notions are telling them they need to have and bring in the other stuff as you're doing it to showcase that it's really not needed or it's not necessary.
That's interesting. I'm glad you, it's always so helpful to hear actual examples of people in these situations.
Oh, it drives me crazy.
Because I used an example, I think in another episode, because of one of my jobs, My boss had seen a segment on the news that morning about Pinterest. And he came to me and was like, should we start a Pinterest? And I was like, we haven't even gotten any of these other social channels off the ground yet. Pinterest makes the absolute least sense for this company. But because he had just seen it for
right.
a 10-minute segment that
correct.
Pinterest is popular, that's yes. all, which is so frustrating. Like you said, like you could have made a suggestion as an expert and it just goes in one ear and out the other, but they hear it somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, and that actually, that's a really good point too, because there have been many situations where the executive won't listen to the marketing director. And so if you bring in an outside expert who says the same thing, so a lot of my friends will say, hey, would you mind having a conversation with my CEO for half an hour? And wow. so I'll repeat the exact same thing that the chief marketing officer has said, but because I said it, it's like golden. So, I mean, it's not a super fun way to go about it because it's a little, it hurts your ego a little bit. But if you have friends who are experts and you can say to them, do you mind spending half an hour, 15 minutes or half an hour with my CEO and say this, this, and this, then that works too. Because what is the fable is like the prophet doesn't have a voice in his own hometown or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So even though you're saying the exact same thing because an outside expert said it, right?
It's yeah. Like, I'm glad you said that because that definitely happens with prospective clients that we get where they're like, I try to tell my boss that we need this, but can you do it, you know, as
right.
well?
Right.
And make
yeah.
the same case, which makes sense. You know, like
yeah.
you want to have people believe you by yourself, but to have like a whole other entity kind of come in and
yeah.
emphasize the same thing
yeah.
can certainly be really helpful.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. I mean, that's just human nature. That's how people are.
Yeah. anything else? Because we're already nearing the end, which I'm shocked
about. Oh my gosh, holy cow.
I'm like, oh, it's been like 25. Are there any other specific biases or fallacies that you think are important for marketers, communicators to understand?
Oh,
anything that I've missed basically that you think is important to.
We talked about cursive knowledge. We talked about framing. We talked about authority. We talked about the bandwagon effect. Actually, that note, I would, if you have not read The Tipping Point, which is an older book, but it still makes sense, I would add that to your list because, and it's a really easy read, because it will help you think through the whole bandwagon effect and getting people involved.
Awesome.
Although I did put this in the blog post, but I will tell this. There's the availability cascade, which is when people believe certain wives' tales or are alternative facts, right? And when I got married, don't ever eat peanut butter at my house. Okay, I'm just going to tell you that because I eat it out of the jar because it's protein that I can get really fast to my muscles when I'm riding. So I ate it right out of the jar. But when I got married, my husband was like, what are you doing? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, you have your own peanut butter jar. I'm eating out of my peanut butter jar. And he's like, no, my mom told us when we were kids that if we ate out of the peanut butter jar, we our lips would get stuck. And I'm like, your mom told you that because there are four of you and she didn't want to buy four jars of peanut butter. And he's like, no. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Same thing with the dishwasher. You cannot open the dishwasher if it's running because his mother told them that they couldn't do that. Like all of this stuff, which is a funny example, but I mean, we kind of can't make fun of Trump anymore, but you know, QAnon believed that he was like the next coming. Right. And then when it didn't happen, they thought, well, maybe it's Biden. And it's just the whole idea that you have this cascade of knowledge based on wives' tales that isn't actually true.
Yeah, that is a very frustrating thing. You know, like the fun examples, you know, that's just funny to see right. how people come from a different place. But yeah, it can get very frustrating when it's like important things.
Right, yeah, and you're like, it's not even true!
Ah! Yeah, so what do you, I guess, you mean, like, what do you do in that instance? Like you said, varies by the person's personality, maybe, and that's why it's tough.
It definitely depends on the person, but I'll make fun of clients. I'm like, you're an idiot.
So actually, I'm glad you, like, when do you, it sounds like it's a matter of choosing your battles.
It is, for sure.
So when do you decide this is the time that I'm going to say something, like call them out pretty much, rather than kind of going the other routes of spending time building them up to? Is it basically when it gets to the point of this is going to jeopardize your results overall, yes, and then you make that call?
Yes. Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think it's just based on sort of critical, how critical is it?
Because I think you definitely at a certain point, you have to do that if you think that they're going to be unhappy with you as an employee, as a vendor, whatever it is.
Right.
Like it's your responsibility almost. Yes. Or it is.
It is your responsibility. Yeah. But like I said, was it a battle I needed to fight that the CEO needed to be on video? No.
Right.
Am I glad he's finally come around? Yeah. So it wasn't critical. So I wasn't going to fight that battle. But do I make fun of him to his face? Yes. Does he know that I tell that story? Probably not.
So at the end of every episode in 2021, I kind of ask a random question.
Oh, no.
It's not related to the topics. And that's everyone's reaction. I'm like, ah. But it's about creativity. And it comes from a selfish place because I feel like I've had trouble staying creative over the last year. And I've really loved hearing people's responses to basically like, how have you been able to stay creative when we've been stuck at home and things have been kind of monotonous and we haven't had as many just like life experiences? Cause I think that's usually what fuels me. So how are you able to kind of stay in a creative mindset or re-enter that mindset when it's been a while?
I will tell you that I'm like you, it's been extraordinarily challenging. I also am homeschooling. Thankfully it's not 5 days a week anymore. It's only 3 days a week right now. And so like the constant turmoil and interruption and all of that combined with running a business and having clients and all that, it's been a lot. And I think it was, if I had my Kindle here, I could tell you exactly, almost a year ago, it was probably middle of May last year. I was fed up with myself because I couldn't read. I couldn't focus on a page. I couldn't read. I wasn't writing. Like if you look back at blog posts from last March and April, they were all repurposed. I didn't write anything new. I wasn't doing anything new. I couldn't. And so I told myself, I think it was the middle of May, it's been almost a year, I had to read a chapter every night. It didn't matter if I retained it. It didn't matter if I ever finished the book, but I had to read a chapter every night. And I started doing that and I stuck with it. And it took me, you know, some nights it's a slog, but, and then some nights I read half a book, right? Yeah. And that has really helped because it's gotten me back in the routine of just being able to free my mind a little bit. And the other thing is, you know, I wasn't, because I didn't race last year, I didn't train. I rode my bike, but I didn't train. And I started training again in December. And that has really helped too, because you don't have anything else to do except think, because you're on the bike forever. So, you know, go for a walk in the middle of the day or do the laundry or, you know, just get away from your desk. I think those things help immensely.
We had Brian Dean on the show recently and he said the same thing about like, for him, it's tennis. And he said, that it's like, you're just hitting the ball. So you're just like, you can't think about it. Yeah. And I, the first part, I think some of the best advice I'd ever heard, I don't even remember what podcast I was listening to, but it was very similar, where it basically said like, if you want to start a habit or do something, you take the tiniest iteration of that habit.
Yep.
So like, even if it was like opening a book, that's all.
Right.
That works. It's the only thing that's ever worked for me.
It works.
And I need to do it again. I like dropped off that, but you know, it's like putting your sneakers on or, you know, whatever. Yeah. It makes so
sense. Well, I also say that gamification works really well for me. So the Kindle has the gamification on it where it tells you, you know, the Peloton has gamification where it'll be like, what workout are you going to do today? Or what challenge you, and if you miss a workout, then you have to start from zero and I'm not starting from zero again. So gamification works for me.
So Jenny, knowing the objective of the show, who would you recommend to be guests on future episodes?
Oh my gosh. Well, I would say Katie Robert from Trust Insights or her business partner, Chris Penn. I love them both, but she's female, so I would say her. Who else would I say? Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
I know. I always tell people they can follow up with me after.
I will follow up for sure.
I will give people that
I will
app.
Give you a list. have you had Erica Held? She'd be great.
No, and that's a great, that's a great suggestion. She's awesome.
She'd be great. Yeah, I'll send you some names.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jenny.
Oh my gosh, it's my pleasure. It's so good to see you.
Yeah, it's great. We I feel like interacted on Twitter and stuff, but never actually met. Yeah, so this is really cool. If you've listened to this and want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from the show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, travel tips, since that might be a thing soon, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. I am a shameless extrovert who would really love to hear from you. I mean that sincerely. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for logo design. And thank you, dear listener. We hope you'll join us next time.